Chapter 13. I fell like a stone. There was magic rushing past me, but I couldn't grab it. My soul was too weak, too battered to reach out.
This is why I told you not to do it!
Sybil screamed in my ear.
You idiot! It's not winning if you blow yourself up too!
She was probably right. But I was having a hard time regretting it. It had felt good to backlash Kaufman, to finally hit back at even one of the things that was constantly shoving me down. I was powerless against my father, no more respected than the little yapping dog he was always comparing me to. But for 5 seconds there, I'd been a nuclear weapon, a true force to be reckoned with. Too bad it was probably going to cost me my life.
There's no probably about it,
Sybil yelled as the backstage view of the bottom of the DFZ grew smaller and smaller above us.
You are going to fall into the abyss if you don't do something now!
For all that she was an AI, Sybil's voice programming had always been top-notch at conveying emotion. Her design team had won all kinds of awards for it, which was the big reason I'd purchased her over the more practical virtual assistants. I'd liked that she'd sounded alive, like a real guardian angel sitting on my shoulder. Listening to her now, I could almost forget that her concern was part of a learning algorithm designed to make her more sensitive to my needs. All I heard was the fear, the terror, and sadness over what was about to happen. Happen to me. That was finally enough to snap me out of my backlashed stupor. I came to with a gasp, my whole body going rigid as my physical state finally caught up with my mental one and realized what was happening. I was falling. Falling to my death if I didn't take Sybil's advice and do something. Unfortunately, there wasn't much for me to do. I was well below any of the islands, and I couldn't even see Nick or Kaufman anymore. My poor abused magic was as useless as a broken limb. I couldn't even flex it, let alone reach out and grab something. That should have been cause for panic, but I was too busy to care right now. So I shoved it down and moved on to my next option, which was flipping myself around. Folding my arms and legs tight against my body, I rolled in midair, flipping my body to look down rather than up. I was hoping that there were more floating islands down here that I hadn't been able to see from above. If I could catch one, I could break my fall. Or my arm, but that was still a step up. But while the plan was good, the reality was very much not. Because the moment I rolled over, I came face to face with the void. It was a lot scarier when you were falling into it. There was no cathedral holding me up anymore. No islands or paths. Just yawning blackness so dark and vast, the only way I knew my eyes were open was because of the wind that was stinging them. There was nothing to cling to. Nothing to catch. Just the dark and the cold, hard understanding that I was going to die. I was going to die. I did start to panic then. Truly panic like I never had before in my life. I was vaguely aware of Sybil saying something soothing and reasonable in my ear, but I was past processing words. The animal part of my brain had taken over, leaving me clawing the air as I fell and fell and fell into magic that got thicker and thicker and thicker. The light vanished. I stopped being able to see my body. The magic was starting to move now, swirling around me in eddies that grew quickly into crashing waves that were big enough to throw me around. The power was thick as water now, making me feel more like I was sinking than falling. But I still didn't stop. I just kept going deeper and deeper, farther and farther. And then, just as the pressure started to crush me, something brushed my face. It was a wind. A grave cold wind that came from everywhere and nowhere. tossing me up like a leaf on a gale. I was still spinning when it swallowed me whole, replacing the endless dark with something else entirely. The next thing I knew, I was in a bedroom. I had no idea how I'd gotten there, if I'd died or passed out or hallucinated the whole thing. But I definitely recognized the place. It was the bedroom in Dr. Lyle's basement apartment. The one where I'd found his body.
Hello.
I jumped a foot in the air, whirling around with my fists up. To do what, I had no idea. I'd never thrown a punch in my life, and my magic was thoroughly useless. It must have looked threatening, though, because the man behind me jumped as well, putting up his own hands, or rather, hand, in self-defense.
Stop! It's me!
I blinked. Me who? Because I was certain I'd never seen this man in my life. He looked stereotypically professorial. 50s to 60s, bushy graying beard, slight pot belly, button-up shirt, and khaki Bermuda shorts. The only thing he was missing was a pair of horn-rimmed glasses. That and his left hand, which was gone at the wrist. And I let out a long breath. You're Dr. Lyle. It wasn't a question, but the man nodded anyway, head bobbing excitedly. The blood drained from my face as the implications of that sank in. Oh, God, I said, dropping to the bed. Am I dead?
I certainly hope not,
Dr. Lyle said briskly.
If you are, then I just stuck my neck out for nothing. You wouldn't believe what I had to do to convince the empty wind to save you.
That explained the cold wind that had caught me. Even so, why did you save me?
For the same reason I gave you my hand,
he said, showing me the stump.
You're the only one who can save my babies.
I blinked. Babies?
My work,
he clarified, looking at me very intently.
You have to understand. I didn't know what Kaufman was going to do. I only took his money because I thought he was a fellow alchemy enthusiast and because no one else would give me funding. When I found out what he really wanted, I grabbed all my notes and ran. I'd already cast the ritual, but this kind of power takes weeks to build, and I was the only one with a location spell. I thought it would be a simple matter of hiding in my storage apartment and waiting it out. But then...
His rapid-fire speech gave out. I sighed. But then you died. He nodded sadly, looking around at his windowless bedroom, which looked exactly as it had when I'd found it, minus the dust and the death.
I woke up here. This little room is all that's left of my life, and the only reason I have this much is because of you. Even if it was just for profit, you looked through my life. You remembered me. That's why I stuck my neck out to save you. You're the only one who can save my legacy now. If Kaufman gets it, I'll have done the greatest evil a man can. You have to stop him.
Already done that, I said smugly, lifting my arm to flex my muscle. I fried him good.
So I heard,
Dr. Lyle said.
But he wouldn't be much of a combat mage if he couldn't recover from a backlash. And he won't stop until he wins. He made a lot of promises when he found me, and our employer isn't the forgiving type. He'll spend his whole fortune to bribe your partner if he has to. You're the only one I can trust to stop him.
But why me? I asked. I'm in this for the money, too.
No, you're not,
Dr. Lyle said, looking at me as if I was being very silly.
If you were in this for the money, you would have taken Kaufman's first buyout. You wouldn't have kept going after they shot at you or blown yourself up just to spite Kaufman. Money's worthless if you're dead, and you keep risking your life over and over, being more and more reckless. That's how I knew money wasn't the point in your case. It's just a tool to get what you really want.
That was a lot more information about me than I was comfortable with a dead guy I'd never technically met knowing. And what do you think I want? He smiled.
Freedom.
I shook my head in wonder. How do you know all this?
Because you've had a piece of me,
Dr. Lyle said, lifting up his stump.
Granted, I spent the majority of my time in a box while that terrifying woman was hacking my security, but the bits I did see told me plenty. Keeping the connection open put a huge strain on what's left of my soul, but it was worth it, because if I hadn't gone so far, I wouldn't know you, and I wouldn't have been able to use that information to save you. Your defiance of your father and determination to keep your free life in the city is what convinced the DFZ to let us in, by the way. She doesn't normally let the empty wind interfere with her domain. Spirits are very territorial. But we convinced her to make an exception.
You convinced a god? I said, shocked. For me?
No, I did it for me, he said. Don't get me wrong. You seem like a very nice girl. But I'm not risking my immortal soul for someone I've never met. I'm doing it because you're one of the few people left who knows who I am. And of those few, you're the only one with the skills and mindset necessary to save my life's work. That I would gladly die for as many times as it takes.
He grinned at me.
Just as money is your tool, you are mine. I didn't get much choice in the matter. But now that I have you, I'll risk everything I have left to enable you to achieve victory, including saving you from the void. In return, though, you must promise you'll save my work.
I promise, I said quickly. If you get me back to the world of the living, I swear I'll save whatever you want. But I stopped, dragging my hands over my bloody face. I need that money, I said at last. I want to help you. And I'm definitely down with keeping everything from Kaufman. But if I don't get at least 10 grand, I go back to my dad tonight.
I'll leave that up to you, he said. So long as it doesn't go to Kaufman, I trust you to do the right thing.
I narrowed my eyes. That sounded suspiciously blasé from a man who'd put his soul on the line to save his work. What do you mean you trust me? You don't even know me. How do you know I won't be as bad as Kaufman?
I don't, he admitted. But that's a gamble I have to take. I'm dead. I can't do things for myself anymore. You're the only tool I have, so you're what I'll use. But I like to think I've learned a little about you through all of this, Opal Young, eh? I'm sure that when you see the product of my labors, you'll feel the same way about it as I do.
Now I was super suspicious. We are still talking about cockatrice eggs, right? Because to hear him talk, you'd think this was a ritual to find the true meaning of friendship.
You saw my spell notes,
he said proudly as a breeze ruffled his thinning hair.
And I'll have you know everything worked perfectly on the first try. Better than perfect. But you'll see for yourself soon enough. We've been talking for too long already. It's time for you to go.
It must have been. The breeze that had ruffled his hair turned into a torrent as he spoke. Other than tousling his hair, it didn't seem to touch Dr. Lyle. But it was blowing me so hard I had to fight to stay upright. Wait! I yelled as the wind lifted me off my feet. How do I find it? Your hand got broken!
The same way you found me!
He yelled back.
Follow the wind!
That sounded like some Pocahontas nonsense. But before I could say as much, the wind blew me away, sweeping me out of the room, through the dark, and up, up, up into the air. I was still flipping over when my back crashed into something solid, knocking the breath right out of me. I opened my eyes with a gasp. I was lying on my back in the grass. Above me, the bottom of the DFC hung like a galactic battleship, while islands of disconnected city bits floated beneath it like clouds. I was staring at it in shock, wondering how I'd gotten here, when I heard Nick's voice.
Opal!
I'd barely managed to lift my head before he grabbed me off the ground and yanked me into his arms.
I thought you were dead.
I pretty much had been. Before I could tell him what had happened, though, he hugged me tighter, burying his face in the crook of my neck as if he was trying to get as close as possible. I jolted, eyes flying wide. I'd never been this close to Nick before, let alone seen him show affection. To be honest, it was a little alarming. But it was also nice. Very nice. It had been a long time since I'd been hugged. And Nick was surprisingly good at it. You would have thought being hugged by someone with that much metal in his body would have been uncomfortable, but he just felt solid and warm, like a sun-baked rock. That, plus the feeling of his ragged breaths against my shoulder, was deeply comforting in a primal, proof-of-being-alive sort of way. And the longer it lasted, the more I liked it. I was about to try lowering my head to his shoulder to see if I could hear his heart beating through all the plates, when Nick suddenly jumped away.
Sorry,
he said quickly, putting a good 2 feet between us.
I didn't intend. That is...
He dropped his eyes, running his hands through his short cropped black hair.
I'm sorry. That was way out of line.
You're gonna be sorry, Sybil muttered.
It's fine, I said quickly, turning down my AI's volume. We all had a traumatic experience. I'm just happy you're okay. Nick's head snapped up.
Happy I'm okay? You fell into the void!
There was a raw edge on his voice that made me cringe. I wasn't used to thinking of Nick as a sensitive person, but I'd clearly scared him something fierce.
I thought you were gone forever,
he continued.
But then you just fell out of the sky behind me. It was like you'd gone in a loop.
He glared at me hard.
What happened? How did you get back?
I'm not entirely sure, I said, looking up at the city floating above us. I fell for a long time. I'm pretty sure I did almost die. But then the empty wind saved me. He gave me an incredulous look.
A death god saved your life?
I nodded, which was a bit of a cop-out. I could have told him about the meeting with Dr. Lyle in a place that might or might not have been the afterlife, but that was all complicated and crazy-sounding, and we still had a lot to do. Nick's answer was close enough, so I let it lie and started looking for my bag. I found it right by my foot. Nick hadn't been exaggerating when he'd said I'd landed behind him. We were still on the same floating hunk of disconnected grassland where we'd gotten jumped, barely 2 feet away from where I'd been standing when Kaufman had grabbed me. The Mercs were still there, too, moaning where Nick had dropped them. The only person who wasn't in the same place was Kaufman. The last time I'd seen him, he'd been shoving me off his spell-worked rock. Now he was splayed on his back in the grass behind Nick, with his face battered, his eyes closed, and his body very, very still. What happened to him?
I did, Nick said.
I cringed at the naked violence in his voice, and Nick stuck his chin out stubbornly.
He pushed you into the void.
Well, thanks for avenging me, I said awkwardly. Is he...
He's still alive. Nick said darkly. I'm not letting him off that easy after all the trouble he's caused. But we should get moving. Mercenary companies always have an emergency evac plan for teams in the field. There's probably a whole squad scrambling to come rescue these idiots right now.
Really? I said, turning back to the wounded Renta soldiers. Even in the Gnarls?
You looked this place up on the internet,
Nick reminded me.
It's not like it's a huge secret. I've never had cause to come down here before, but Kaufman and Dr. Lyle clearly planned to do their business in the Gnarls way before Lyle bolted. I bet people do shady stuff down here all the time, and wherever people are shady, you find mercenaries. They've probably even got a special protocol for it.
You know a lot about mercenaries, I said, sliding my bag onto my shoulder. Nick shrugged.
I've worked a lot of jobs, but I'd bet you 10 to 1 that backup's already on the way. And it's best if we're not here when they arrive.
Good thinking, I said, looking around. Just give me a minute to... Aha! I ran across the stretch of grass, dropping to my knees beside the pile of crushed scrap that was all that remained of Dr. Lyle's hand.
What are you doing? Nick asked.
Keeping a promise, I replied. Working as fast as I could, I unzipped the front pocket of my messenger bag and scraped all the pieces inside, taking care not to leave so much as a screw behind. When I was certain I'd gotten everything, I held my bag up to the gentle breeze blowing past my face. See? I whispered to the wind. I didn't forget. I'm going to give it a proper burial just like I promised, and Nick and I are going to make sure that Kaufman doesn't get anything of Dr. Lyle's. I've done everything that was asked of me, so can you please guide us to the ritual site? I held my breath as I finished, listening for a sign, a word, some kind of proof that I wasn't just talking to myself. But the wind didn't reply. It just blew a little harder, sending my hair into my eyes. I pushed the strands away again with a frustrated huff. Could you be a bit more specific? I said as I rose to my feet. Priests might be able to get by on signs and portents, but I'm a cleaner, and I'm on a deadline. Can I get a big flashing arrow or something? I'd barely finished when the wind gusted so hard I was nearly knocked off my feet. I caught myself with a grin. Thank you.
Who are you talking to?
I looked over my shoulder to see Nick behind me with Kaufman thrown over his shoulder like a bloody sack of potatoes. Why are you bringing him? Nick snorted.
You think I'm going to leave him here to be rescued after what he pulled? He's the client. The Mercivac team will grab him first, so I'm not going to give them the chance.
He reached up to pat Kaufman on the back with his right hand, his original one, which he must have put back on while I was busy.
He's coming with me.
I did not like that Kaufman was coming. Not that I was worried about him giving us any more trouble. He wasn't even conscious, and his face looked worse than mine did. But given how many times Dr. Lyle had specifically warned me against him, bringing him didn't feel like a savvy move. Nick didn't look like he was going to budge, though, and my shoulders slumped in defeat. Fine, I said. But no making deals with him.
I don't think he's going to be saying much, Nick said.
Then he gave me a funny look.
But what would we be making deals with him about? The hand's destroyed, and we're still 0.5 kilometer from the ritual site.
He nodded at the islands swirling around us.
This whole place shuffles itself like a card deck every few minutes. I'm not even sure which way we were headed anymore. There's no way we can find the ritual site now.
Yes, we can, I said. Nick sighed.
I know you're desperate to get money to pay your dad, but this place is dangerous on a really freaky level. You've already fallen into oblivion once. It's time to face up. We had a good shot, but it's over. We can't just poke around blindly, hoping we get lucky.
It's not over, I said fiercely. And we don't have to get lucky. I know how to find it. All we have to do is follow the wind. I pointed in the direction of the breeze, which, though no longer roaring, was still blowing steadily in a specific direction. Nick, however, was looking at me like I'd lost my marbles.
Follow the wind?
I know how it sounds, I said, but you saw the empty wind blow me up here, so give it a chance. The worst that happens is we wander lost in the gnarls for a few more hours.
That's a pretty bad worst, Nick said. Did you forget the part about how people get lost down here and never come back? And I'm not sure the empty wind is someone you should be taking help from. Maybe he wants us to get forgotten down here, too.
That's not how it works, I said. He arched an eyebrow.
You sure about that?
I wasn't, really. But I needed this to be true. So I threw myself into it. Let's just try, I said, looking him in the eyes. Please.
Nick sighed and waved for me to lead the way. Flashing him a thankful smile, I pulled off my gloves, licked my index finger, and held it up to the wind. When I was certain of its direction, I turned and started walking, following the gusts through the loops and twists of the gnarls toward what I hoped would be our prize. After what felt like a lot more than half a kilometer of corkscrew paths and jumps between floating islands, the wind suddenly stopped. I stopped as well, looking around to see where it had brought us. The answer seemed to be nowhere special. We'd just made it to a floating chunk of city that looked as if it had been part of a massive fire not too long ago. The whole thing was a maze of blackened cinder block walls and big pits of rubble where buildings had collapsed. I could still smell the smoke on the air, but I didn't feel any magic aside from the flood that counted as normal down here. Not that it was easy to feel anything, what with the geyser of power constantly rushing past me, but I should have sensed something. Big spells always left a presence. A hum in the air. That was what made them so hard to hide, and why Dr. Lyle had secreted his down here. Assuming the wind hadn't led me astray, he must have done a really good job, because I couldn't feel a thing. I was about to suggest that we fan out to better search the burned buildings when Nick said,
"Is that it?"
I whirled around to see Nick pointing down at my feet. When I looked down, I saw that I was standing on a manhole cover. Like everything else here, the round iron cap had been blackened by the fire. But on top of the ashy black was the deeper ink black of a marker. The masks forming a chicken scratch spellwork I now recognized almost as well as my own name.
"This is it!" I cried, dropping to my knees on the pavement. When I tried to pull the manhole cover up, though, the spell sizzled, freezing it in place.
"Ugh," I groaned. "It's locked." Nick arched an eyebrow.
"Can you ask the wind to unlock it?"
I wasn't sure if he was making fun of me or not, and I didn't have the time or patience to find out. I was too busy glaring at the spellwork, attempting to work out the logic in my mind. Attempting and failing. This was why I'd taken the notes to Heidi. I'd never been good at wrapping my brain around thaumaturgical logic, much less Dr. Lyle's crazy custom stuff. That was fine, though. The circumstances were wildly different. But when you boiled it down, this was just another lock. And cracking locks was what I did every day.
"Stand back," I said, placing my hands on either side of the circle.
"Are you sure this is smart?"
Sybil whispered as Nick got clear.
"You nearly cooked yourself earlier. Should you really be using more magic now?"
"No," I said, "but I didn't come all this way just to look at it."
"Can you wait a little at least?"
my AI pleaded.
"Your dad will delete me if I let you burn your magic out."
I couldn't care less what my dad thought of this, but she did raise a good point. "How much time do I have left before midnight?"
3 hours, Sybil said. "But that's still plenty of..."
I grabbed the magic and yanked it into my hands, ignoring the burning pain that came with it. When Sybil started to lecture me about the dire ramifications of what I was doing, I shook my goggles off my head onto the ground behind me. I knew she was right. I just didn't want to hear it. What I wanted, what I needed, was under this lid. It wasn't that I didn't care if I broke my magic. I cared enormously. So much so that I nearly dropped the power because my hands were shaking so badly. I just cared about my freedom more. I'd fought too hard and given too much already to lose at the last inch. So I gritted my teeth and pushed through, trying not to think about the very scary numbness that was starting to spread through my mind as I clumsily shaped the magic into the form I needed. Thankfully, it didn't take much. The spellwork on the entrance seemed to be more of a seal than a lock, because it popped the moment I applied pressure, making the iron manhole cover jolt against its collar. As it moved, a rush of rich magic welled up from the dark, tingling across my skin like a thousand little feathers. Another time it probably would have felt nice. In my current overextended state, though, it
burned like hot needles, making me gasp as I jumped away.
What?
Nick demanded. Nothing, I lied. Let's see what we've got.
It took both of us to lift the heavy iron cover. When it was off, I put my goggles back on my head and flicked on my lights, ignoring Sybil's grumbling as I scanned the metal rungs of the ladder down. They looked normal enough, so I put on my protective gloves and started making my way down. I wasn't entirely sure how manholes worked down here, given that we were inside a floating hunk of unused city, but other than a slight swaying feeling, I noticed nothing out of the ordinary. After about 10 feet, my feet hit solid ground. When I swept my lights around to see where we had come out, though, I realized the platform I was standing on was the only one.
Wow, I breathed. The manhole had led down into a storm cistern, one of those huge circular wells designed to catch excess runoff before it became a flash flood. Now, though, the bottom of the tank was gone, leaving only the void beneath a golden mesh of pure magic that had been strung across the emptiness like a cargo net. And sitting in that net, cradled gently against each other like delicate fruits, were gold and crimson speckled eggs. Dozens of them.
Are those what I think they are?
Nick asked, dropping Kaufman on the ground at the bottom of the ladder as he rushed in to get a better look.
I think so, I said, eyes going round as I tried to count all the basketball-sized orbs. Tried and failed.
There has to be 100 of them,
Nick said, his eyes gleaming greedily in the glow of the magical net.
How much are they worth?
30,000, I replied breathlessly. Each. We stared at each other, our faces breaking into matching grins as we did the math. 30,000 times 100 was $3 million.
We're rich,
Nick cried, grabbing me by the shoulders. We're rich, I agreed, nodding so fast I made myself dizzy. Sybil, I cried, too excited to do fractions. What's 40% of 3 million?
1.2 million.
The rush of joy I felt then was almost too strong to take.
1.2 million! That was enough to pay back my dad multiple times over.
Even if I had to sell a few eggs at rock-bottom prices to get the money before midnight, there was no way I could fail to raise at least 10,000.
Which meant I'd done it. I'd won! I won! I cried, grabbing Nick and jumping up and down. We did it! We...
A sound cut me off. It was loud and sharp, as though something had snapped. I was worried part of the infrastructure we were standing on was breaking off when it happened again. Then again, and again. Within seconds, the air was full of cracking and popping, making my stomach knot as Nick and I slowly turned together to look at our prize. Our literal nest of golden eggs, which were now hatching before our eyes.